What makes you extraordinary to the rest of us is just your everyday normal. And you tend to discount what comes easily to you, and therefore think everyone else has it too.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understanding from neuroscience, anthropology, history, business, and behaviorism about curiosity and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Simon Brown. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage, and Chief Learning Officer at Novartis. And today I'm here with my co-authors, Garrick Jones.
Hello.
And Paul Ashcroft.
Hi there.
And we're delighted to be joined by Sanyin Xiang. Sanyin is an investor and advisor to tech founders, boards, venture capital firms, including Google Ventures, sports industry execs, and Fortune 500 CEOs, bringing her expertise in culture, leadership, growth, and team cohesion, as well as a very diverse network of influencers. Sanyin is the founding executive director of Duke's University Coach K Leadership and Ethics Center at its Fuqua School of Business. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Drawing on her science and engineering backgrounds, Sanyin is also an adjunct associate professor with Duke's Pratt School of Engineering and a senior fellow with Duke Divinity School's Ormond Center. Recognized in 2021 by Thinkers50 as the world's most influential coach and mentor, very impressive, Sanyin coaches C-suite teams and develops enterprise leadership programs to unleash human capital and tap unseen potential to thrive in an exponentially changing world. She's also a deep love for working with students, sharing with them insights on what it takes to succeed at the different levels of one's career progression and cultivating their innate and distinct strengths. A globally recognized thought leader, she shares out insights with her LinkedIn following of more than 1 million people and was named a LinkedIn top global influencer voice in both 2017 and 2018. She authored the award-winning The Launch Book, which gives readers an action plan for leveraging change using behavioral science concepts. And her ideas have been featured widely in things like the New York Times, Inc., Forbes, Fortune, and the Wall Street Journal. As a speaker, she's addressed audiences from the White House to military officers, Fortune 500 companies, and CHROs. She's host of the Global Sports Owners and CEO Summits series, and she was just recognized last month in the 2022 USC Relevance Report, with her relevance cited as being built on her diversity of relationships. So that will be something we will come on to explore shortly. So welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, Sanyin.
It is so good to be here, Simon, Garrick, and Paul. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So, Sanyin, super impressive bio you have, and there was lots of things that I could have included in there that I didn't as well. So maybe let's kick off with a little bit on your background. Maybe could you take us through your journey to being recognized as the world's most influential coach and mentor, which is super impressive.
Well, first of all, I think the only thing, thank you for that generous introduction, Simon. I think the only thing that audiences really need to know about me is the following. My mission in life is to enable greatness in others. And that's how that shows up as an educator, as a mom. I have three kids who keep me curious all the time with their questions. And as an advisor, a coach. So all of this is in service of that mission of I love seeing greatness in others and then bringing it to life. And so in terms of my own journey, I was an immigrant. And I came to the U.S. at age 7. Not knowing a word of English. And as an immigrant, it's a journey where you have to quickly learn and understand and navigate the challenges and the opportunities and the culture. And so fast forward with that sort of mindset, when I graduated from Duke as a biomedical engineer, instead of going the traditional engineering route, I ended up in DC at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, but not working on engineering, working on issues at the intersection of science policy and law. So let's take a topic such as behavioral genetics, and before it becomes a reality, what are the ethical, social, and legal implications of it? So it's a forward-thinking type of endeavor. And after that, I came back to Duke for my MBA, and through serendipity, landed in this role as the founding executive director of the Coach K Leadership and Ethics Center. And this is where the journey really, really began. Every 3 years, I take on learning something new, because I think about a multi-platform career. I think about how we have to scaffold on top of what we already know and continue to explore new insights, new ways. And in the first few years of the job at the Coach K Leadership and Ethics Center, it was, how do we convene leaders at the highest levels across public, social, private sectors to understand what's needed for leadership in the next 10 years? And learning how to convene and how to facilitate and how to get people to lower their walls and be vulnerable so we can actually get to the heart of the issues. That was the first few years of learning. And we were generating such interesting insights. I thought, all right, let's not only use these insights for our student population here, let's help Duke make a mark, a larger mark in the world by sharing those insights out. So I started writing for Huffington Post and Forbes and Wall Street Journal. And then I became a LinkedIn influencer. I didn't know anything about social media.
Next thing, you had a million followers.
You picked it up fast.
Yeah, I'll tell you how that is. I didn't go by any playbooks. So when LinkedIn had the video capabilities, it rolled it out first to the influencers. And the idea was for them to toss us a question and we to share our wisdom and our experiences in the fights. And I thought, well, can there be another way of using this video? I happen to be coming across all types of interesting people, from CEOs to generals to students. Instead of just me sharing that advice, why don't I flip the camera on them and I pose a question? And then, as we all know, but it wasn't intentional. It wasn't calculated. It was just sort of, I want to listen. I'm hearing something interesting from Simon Brown and I want to remember that. So let's capture it and let's share it out with the world, because the reader, the audience is the hero of every podcast, hero of every book. And so I did that, and that's how it organically grew to a million followers. And then a few years later, I love the mentoring, I love the coaching, and I met one of my great mentors, Marshall Goldsmith. And Marshall said, Sanyin, you have all the relationships with the CEOs, you have the leadership framework, because that's what you've been working on for the last more than a decade. Why don't you build also a coaching practice? And I'm going to give you the basics of the tools for coaching that you can incorporate and you can build into your own coaching playbook. And that's how so that was an exploration. And then the last 2 years, so through coaching, I started also, there was a small subset of Series A, Series B startups. And I said, all right, I know cash is king. It's not the same type of rates as corporate, but I can play that sort of advisory role. And I started realizing investing time is not very different than investing money in these startups and building up an instinct, because that's what we're all doing as we're diving into these different areas. It's building up an instinct.
I know we really want to talk to you about the launch and the VC stuff, and we're going to get to that. But before we do that, I'm really interested in, how did you get to, I want to learn something new every 3 years? Because that, to me, talks about curiosity. And we, as you know, are all about curiosity, especially on this podcast. So I want to ask you, how did you get to the 3 years? I'm going to learn something new. And then also, what role does curiosity play in your coaching?
So how I got to the every 3 years, it didn't start out that way. It was only, I like to reflect, and in reflection on what was happening, I noticed there was this three or four year thing that was happening. But what got me to...
Cycles.
Yeah, cycles. But what got me to take on something new around that time is, you think about diving into an area and you start learning, soaking it up. But in soaking it up, I learned from people as well as books. I learned from networks and from deep relationships. And so as I start talking to them, all these people who are experts in a particular area, you start seeing new opportunities that arise, new interesting things like, oh, I wonder what it would be like to jump down that rabbit hole, right? LinkedIn, I didn't set out to be a LinkedIn influencer. That was one of my mentees. She became a managing editor at LinkedIn, and she called me up and she said, I have the power to designate my first LinkedIn influencer, and it's going to be you. I said, all right, fantastic. Now let's explore. What does that mean? Because that is consistent with my mission of enabling greatness in others. And it's about a way of democratizing access to insights and leadership ideas.
I wanted to ask, what was the last thing you did in the last 3 years? What was the last learning platform?
It's actually investing. Being an LP in funds, investing in a sports team. We won the league championship. So I was very proud of that. But all of that is scaffolded on, at the end of the day, I mean, we are in the people business, right? It's all scaffolded on deep and trusted relationships and learning from the best. But in answer to your question, Garrick, about what role does curiosity play in coaching? It's everything. I think when people think about coaching or mentoring, they will picture a coach or a mentor sitting there giving out advice and prescriptions. But that's not always what coaching is. Coaching and mentoring is about asking questions. Because when you think about it, all of us have such different sets of experiences. And what works for one experience may not necessarily work for another experience. Mm. So when I sit down, whether it's a CEO or a student, I like to ask questions and get the context. And most likely they have the instinct for what the answer should be. And it's giving them the confidence to draw out, but it has to be what works in their context. And so the curiosity part is just asking questions and say, oh, I wonder, okay, there's a dissonance between what I'm hearing. Let's dive into that. What does that mean? Or how did you think about this? And then we're just sharing our experiences. We aren't being prescriptive.
I love that. Your career, as you just described it, and as we heard in your bio, I would describe it as almost a curious career. It's one that you've figured it out and you've just tried things, which I love. You seem to try so many different varied things and then going towards the things that you're attracted to. How has curiosity played a role in how you've sort of curated your career? And when have you found it difficult? And how have you got through that?
That's a great question. And by the way, we should coin that, the curious career. Trademark it for the Curious Advantage.
It's our next book.
There we go. Look what you've done. You've created our next book.
So I think we don't have the answers all within ourselves. I mean, I very much believe in community. Like, resilience is not only about individual grit, it's also about resilience in a community and in teams. So this idea of teams. And when I think about curating my career, I actually have a lot of self-doubt. And a little bit of self-doubt is actually good, because it's that self-doubt that enables us to say, let me go out and get other pieces of data and other perspectives. Where self-doubt, and that's where the challenges come in, is when it paralyzes us, right? So I'll talk about those two. So the self-doubt that enables us to be curious and to say, let me go out and get data to either validate or disvalidate my existing assumptions. That's from talking to mentors. That's from a fearlessness and reaching out to people, whether it's students, because they're the new relevance makers, or people who have been doing this for years, to say, all right, tell me more about this. What does this mean? So I was learning more about private equity. I remember I was learning, jumping into private equity, wanting to understand how private equity works. And one of my former students happened to have just roll off of a role in private equity. So I called her up and I said, Isabel, I need a 2-hour tutorial from you on private equity. She was 20 years younger than me, but that's great because she is the expert. She was far more of an expert than me. So I can ask her questions, and there's that trust of being able to be vulnerable and not being afraid, gosh, is this person going to think I'm stupid? Is this person, which is one of the things that keeps us from being curious and asking, is fear of what others might think. That's a way I've curated my career. And if I'm say now I'm looking at exploring potentially in 2 years' time being on a public board. I serve on nonprofit boards. Mm-hmm. Now, to public board, you know, I wasn't sure in the last 2 years whether that's going to be a great fit for me, where I could add something that is deeply valuable and differentiating. So I started reaching out to friends who are on boards, public boards, and say, what is the experience like? What do you see in my experience? What do you see in my superpowers that might add value? And by the way, where are the gaps that would show up? And what did you find fun about it? And what are some of the negatives about it? So you just ask all these questions and you start building out a contextual map. Now, where it's been, where I have stumbled in my career, and it's one of the reasons why I wrote the launch book. So I've noticed with high achievers, like all of us on this call and many of us listening in, we aim for perfection.
All about that.
We procrastinate. And the reason why I wrote the launch book wasn't because I had the answers. We write books because we are seeking answers to questions that plague us, that haunt us. And I wanted to know, how do I get beyond this fear of failure so that I can launch more confidently? And so the launch book is a collection of stories and insights I've gathered from friends and mentors. And I thought, okay, now I've got all these insights and tools and answers, so I can take that first step and put one foot in front of the other. Let's share that out with the world, because if I have this problem, other people might have it too. And then that book is also a love song to their experiences and their lessons with me.
Love the piece you talk about there with questions, and I guess in the context of launch, then having a lot of questions is a great place to be, because you probably don't have the answers at that point in one startup. And we had Lisa Bedell on one of our podcasts previously, and she talked about the importance of questions, and particularly killer questions. Mm-hmm. So what are the great questions that you can ask that actually open up curiosity and open up, you know, new ways of doing things? I guess in the context of a launch and setting up an organization, if you can come up with those killer questions, what are the things that make you think differently? What are the things that spark that creativity? Then those questions can be absolutely critical.
And while we're on the topic of questions, because this is one, questions are also another one of the things I love writing about, leaning in on questions. The questions we ask can reveal more about us than the answers that we give. So how we frame those questions and how we ask our questions, because in leadership, to be able to build influence, we have to constantly project credibility and reveal our intentions and reveal our motivations and goals, right? And then we also have to build trust. Asking questions, in a way, equalizes the person whom we are trying to influence or whom we are leading. And so it serves that purpose, but we're also revealing to them the way we're framing the question. This is how we think. And that also that's an opportunity to build credibility. So questions are so powerful.
Absolutely. I'd like to come back to something you mentioned earlier around self-doubt. And coincidentally, earlier this morning, we have within Novartis, our unbossed is one of our values. And we have regular programs where we bring our leaders together. And this morning, actually, one of the things we were talking about was self-doubt. So very, very timely that she mentioned that. We're talking about how some doubt is actually healthy, because it creates the curiosity, because you're questioning things. You're curious to find better ways, so that doubt can be valuable. But too much doubt takes you to the sort of imposter syndrome and can be paralyzing. And not enough doubt at the other end of the spectrum can be overconfident or not challenging oneself. So interesting. And an element of self-doubt that actually, or doubt that creates curiosity being a healthy thing, but not overplaying it in either direction.
Yeah, I love that. And so where I'm focusing all my time now is on superpowers. And superpowers actually connects with self-doubt, because the premise of superpowers is one of the biggest blind spots I notice when I'm working, whether it's a CEO or a high-achieving student, is the things that make us extraordinary, the things that make us special, our differentiating strengths. And think about it, Simon, Garrick, and Paul, what makes you extraordinary to the rest of us? It's just your everyday normal. And you tend to discount what comes mm-hmm. easily to you. And therefore, I think everyone else has it too. If we understand what our superpowers are, the things that very few other people have, and that gives us energy, and we can unlock that blind spot, that's something for us to hold on to and walk more confidently into a room, because now we're more sure of how we can add value, how we can contribute to the conversation, to the team, to the project.
Could you give us a couple of examples? What would be a superpower? And do we have hidden superpowers that we, you know, how do we unlock them?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Here's where curiosity plays in. It's in the latent superpowers. So let me take you along the path there. So we think about self-doubt, or we think about superpowers as something that through reflection or through a lot of self-awareness, we're trying to understand and discover. But the key is we always forget about the others, the other people in the process of that. The key to discovering our superpowers lies in seeking that information, that data from others. We just happen to be in a society that has this habit of saying, wow, it's so obvious that Simon and Paul's superpowers include their ability to listen and ask provocative questions. They must surely know that. Therefore, let's not rush to tell him that. It's so obvious to us. It must be obvious to them. Let's rush and tell him about, here's your areas for improvement as a way of empowering you instead. So we walk around not knowing, but we have to go and seek that information out, right? So we are dependent and interdependent on others, and vice versa. As leaders, what if we, when we say, all right, I'm going to give you feedback, instead of people cringing, we say, all right, you know, we're going to talk about some of your superpowers, your behaviors, and then let's talk about the behavior of detractors that gets in the way of you fully expressing and using your superpowers to the max, right? So there's this dynamism that's happening. Now, what are examples of superpowers? The type of examples that we're probably most aware of are the intellectual and athletic superpowers, right? Because that's what we think of. Those are the tangibles.
These are the ones that stand out, right? You can see them.
Yeah. But where I am going with superpowers and why I'm so excited about this is in a world where the team is now the atomic unit of success, in a complex world where we actually have to be about community and team to be able to solve the complex challenges and leverage the complex opportunities, that interdependency, it has to be built on the relationship superpowers, the interpersonal superpowers. And yet, so what are some of those? I'll give you an example. Shane Battier is one of the great basketball players to come out of Duke University. And he was a two-time NBA champion. But if you look at Shane's statistics, it was not extraordinarily more stellar than that of other basketball players. But when you look at when Shane is on the court, the entire team does exponentially better. Why is that? Because one of Shane's superpowers is the ability to be that emotional glue. So when's the last time we ever promoted someone for being an emotional glue? Right. When does that even show up on their performance reviews, right? You think about, so where I'm going is really talking, having a more awareness of these relationship or interpersonal superpowers. And when I do these team, executive leadership team exercises where I have people talk about each other's superpowers, the interesting thing is when they're talking about each other's superpowers, they're usually talking about the emotional or the relationship superpowers. And that's when that aha comes. So we have a desire to go there. We recognize the value. It just is not recognized yet in the system. And so what the superpowers work is also building towards is in a society that is demanding our organizations be more human, so how do we have a language for those relationship superpowers that can then help us build those super teams? But on the curiosity part, are there superpowers we don't know about? So one key aspect I've discovered in this work is latent superpowers. The first type is expressed, but we just don't know about it. Everyone else sees it, and that's our blind spot. But then there's latent. Latent superpowers are superpowers that we all have. The situation for us, for them to be expressed, just hasn't yet arisen. So isn't that an opportunity to go out and embrace different? I thought I was not good with people. I didn't know I could be good with people until I was 35. Because as an immigrant coming in, I didn't know the English language, and I look at kids on the playground and they are so charismatic and big personalities, and I'm not that. I'm an introvert. And so I thought the narrative I was building up since age 7 is the type of career I should be sticking to is a career that's very book-driven, very intellectual pursuit, and that's it. It's not about a career dealing with people. And when I got this job, one of the things I had to do was go and talk to CEOs and reach out to CEOs and to others to learn. I mean, that's how I started discovering, wow, just as I love discovering the awesomeness in books, I love discovering the awesomeness in people.
And therefore, you need to rewrite that in a narrative around what your superpower is.
It took me another 5 years to realize that that was actually a superpower connecting people, because I didn't have that feedback. I was just doing it, right? Like now, and it then became an expressed but unknown to me. And it was through mentors and friends when I started asking them, all right, what's a differentiating strength that I bring to the table? And he said, you're a connector. You're a super connector. I'm like, what? What does that mean? Is that a value? Are you just saying I'm a human Rolodex? And they said, no, because you have to understand each person's backgrounds. You have to listen. You have to understand the value creation that can happen when you make those introductions in beyond the usual suspects. So we all have latent, but yet to be expressed superpowers. And even until our deathbed.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
We had Spencer Harrison on, who's a professor at INSEAD, and he was making the case that around curiosity being a superpower. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we absolutely agree, if not sort of the ultimate superpower, because it actually powers up many other superpowers by being curious. Would you agree? Would you see curiosity as the ultimate superpower?
Yes. I think empathy too, right? Because there's a human connection. So I would say it's one of the top ones, but I always hesitate to say there's anything that is the one, right?
Yes.
But I think I like what Professor Spence says, because it's about there are some superpowers that are amplifiers for other superpowers. And I think there are also superpowers that through practice, because of how we are wired as human beings, through practice, we can actually, that can be a ubiquitous superpower for everyone, right? And curiosity is one of those, because I look at any child, any five-year-old, they're brimming with curiosity. So it is human to be curious, but somewhere along the way, maybe it's through schooling where we are taught to give answers instead of ask questions. Somewhere along the way, we dampen that superpower, but we can go back and unlock it. And it's like anything. It's through practice, through experimentation to say, oh, I tried it this one way. Let me ask this question another way. And what was the difference? And what can I learn from that? We're all capable of that wonder.
This superpower of curiosity in children is evident, but you are really bringing it into the boardroom, if I can say, because you mentioned to us that one of your recent board and distinguished fellow meetings at your center, you focused on curiosity and looking at it from the angle of the difference between having it and expressing it. And I'm fascinated by what's the difference between having curiosity and expressing curiosity, and why is that important for the board and for senior leaders?
Think about the last time you were in a meeting, all the listeners out there. It may be in the boardroom, it may be in a major meeting, in a formal meeting, and you have a question. Or you might have not just one question, you might have 10 questions. Did you ask it? And the difference between us feeling comfortable in asking it versus us keeping it in is whether the environment, we have a level of trust with the environment. Because trust, the classic definition of trust is a willingness to be vulnerable in face of uncertainty. So it's got me thinking about this idea of having it versus expressing it. We can meet very curious people, and I know they're curious because for them to get where they are, they have to have lots of questions and explore. But in the conversation, they don't come off as curious. And I started wondering, why is that? And I think that's because this idea of, as leaders, are we creating the environment where people, they feel vulnerable enough to express their curiosity? Or are they afraid if they ask a question or they demonstrate that they don't know, that it's going to be seen as weakness, that it's going to be seen? And so let's not be quick to label someone as an incurious person because they don't seem to be asking a lot of questions. The thing to think about then is, is there something that has to do with us and the environment that we're creating? Every time they're asking a question, are we shooting them down? Are we saying, that's interesting, tell me more?
So it comes down to environment. And then the question for me is, how do you create that environment in which you allow people to be curious? And you're talking about how a leader allows the group around them to be curious. Do you have some pointers and see what you see works and what you advise, what you want to do in order to achieve that? And why is that valuable?
One of the things that we have with those of us who are in positions of power, leadership positions, have the capability to do is helping to shape the environment around us. And it starts with us. You want people to be more curious. You want people to ask questions. You want people to be able to red team something or poke holes at something. You go first. There's a presentation and you don't know what a word means or what is that? Let's stop for a moment. What does that mean? I'm not quite understanding. Can you help us understand? Because chances are, if you have that question, others have it too, right? So you go first. Now, I say this, you have to also understand your context. So it's not just like every time. You have to understand the context and the environment that you're in. But generally, say if you are working with a team of direct reports, you are in a position of power and you can have in a position of power to demonstrate that, right? You're also balancing that out with, you also have expertise in something, or you can ask a question about how things are fitting together. So you go first. And then you can just pause and you can say, does anyone have, what questions do people have? Now, here's the thing. If you are new to the team, or the team has a high number of people who are new, chances are, even when you say, does anyone have any questions? Everyone's just going to nod and not have any questions. So something I like to do is, like, when I'm coaching and work, I was like, all right, ahead of time, put in a plant. Mm-hmm. You want to create an environment where if you are, say, in a town hall and you're sharing and you really want different people to ask questions and people to give tough feedback, then you put in a plant ahead of time for people to illustrate that. And then how you respond to that, like someone asks a tough question, beware of your expressions. Because when you're CEO, your expressions aren't your own anymore. So are you growling? Do you have a scowl on your face and you're just not aware of it? Or do you say, are you demonstrating encouragement? Because how you're reacting to it is then people would say, we have permission to do more of that. And why is that important? Because we all have blind spots. If we want to really leverage our people as the most important assets in our organization, we have to leverage their curiosity. We have to leverage their experiences, the data they're seeing, their pushback. What are they also seeing as the opportunities? Those data, they are make or break the success of an initiative.
So we had, I think I've shared it on some of our previous podcasts. We had some very interesting data around the role that the leader plays on the environment of the team, and particularly around curiosity. So we looked within Novartis at the difference between a favorable and an unfavorable leader as rated by the team and how that impacts engagement. And overall, there's an 18-point difference in engagement between a favorable and an unfavorable leader. But the biggest gap between the two is in curiosity, and there's a 22-point difference in curiosity. So exactly to what you were saying, that the leader can make or break the environment. They create the psychological safety or not for people to speak up. And using techniques, as you were describing, of not only maybe even what are the questions that people have, but also what's the dissenting view here, or why might this go wrong, or really encouraging people to take an opposing view, creating the safety for people to do that, and therefore getting those different views out into the room. So the leader plays a very important role in doing that. I'd like to come back to something I said in the introduction around the USC Relevance Report and having a look at where you were or why you were awarded for there. One of the things that I read in there was it said, her leadership evangelism is informed by the belief that everyone has an innate and instinctive gift or superpower, as she calls it. So as we just described, context, community, and confidence help us discover and hone these superpowers. So I don't know if you're aware, in our book, we have the seven C's of curiosity. And I love the connection here because we talk in there around connection, community, and confidence as being three of the seven C's in our seven C's model around curiosity. So could you share maybe why context, community, and confidence are so important for you?
So I believe we are more resilient through community, right? So there's individual grit, but I know on the scale from 1 to 10, my individual grit level is like a 2. All right, it's like more like a 0.5. The 2 was being incredibly generous. But I know I can overcome major obstacles because of the people I have around me, the friends and the deep relationships. So I know that's a power of community. And I work a lot with military leaders, and they see this too. It's the group together. So community helps us learn. Community helps us be more resilient. And given the last 2 years that we have had, resilience and sustainable resilience is so key. And connection, oh gosh, we're human beings. We're wired to collaborate. We're wired to interact with each other. So one of the things I'm working on is this idea of the agendaless conversation. And you think about in-person, it was pre-pandemic and in-person. Those agendaless conversations happen right before, like at the water cooler or before we go into the lunch line or during breaks of a meeting. But in a virtual, heavily virtual environment, how do we bring those agendaless, how do we incorporate those agendaless conversations? Because at the end of the day, you know, based on the MIT Human Lab study, they said the highest performing teams also have the highest number of informal interactions. And so building those, and the agendaless conversations are a way of connecting that chit-chat. Those chit-chat moments are connecting the humanity in each of us. And we need to, before we see each other as functions, we have to see each other as human beings.
I so agree with that. We have water coolers in our group, as you can imagine, everybody else's. We've been trying to make them specific around various things. People use them as show and tell, or they bring in, you know, things that are interesting to them and they prepare for them and so on. And of course, we had one not that long ago where the person who was going to do it got COVID, and so they couldn't do it. And we ended up with 40 people on a call with no agenda. And guess what? They had a fantastic conversation. So I really hear what you're saying. And it makes me realize that as leaders in the new digital reality, we have to pay attention to these informal, agenda-free conversations. And we have to make them happen. That's the thing. You have to create time for them to happen and recognize that they're valuable, hugely valuable.
Or it's and being intentional about it. So even before the start of this podcast, what were we doing? We were having chit chat, right? And we're discovering that people we knew in common with Simon, and we were discovering, like Garrick with Cheryl. And then we talked about Lyndon and our kids. And those were chit chat moments that help us form a connection.
We always think we should record those.
I think you're perhaps getting to one of the questions I really want to ask you. We read that one of the things you have is an ability to intuit trends, which I imagine is a little bit part of how you're connecting to new ideas and connecting to people. And I imagine a little bit to do with the agendaless conversation. But this must be really helpful in your role as an investor as well. So could you tell us a little bit about how you do this, or what's your view on that?
I think that's from the USC Relevance Report, Intuit Trends. That was very generous of them to write that, because I just do what I do, you know, and it's just one foot in front of the other. But what I love to do, and this actually stemmed from my days at OAS, when I was looking at what are the legal, social, and ethical implications of scientific advances before they happen, because that's when we have to think about that, is there, in order to understand those bigger picture, it requires bringing together people in the room that were that have not been together before. So they include media, policymakers, scientists, religious leaders, unusual suspects. And you pull them together into a room, and then you start getting insights about what they're seeing from their vantage point, and you start building a collection of the big picture. This goes back to why I'm so excited to always talk with people from different backgrounds and different industries that I haven't been before. Like one of the companies that I'm advising right now is called Privateer. Privateer is co-founded by Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, and Alex Fielding. Privateer is deep tech dealing with low Earth orbit debris and the dangers of that. And so you have to be able to create, in a way, a Google Maps. What they're trying to do is create a Google Maps for low Earth debris that is zipping around like, you know, as fast as bullets and can cause tremendous damage. That was a topic I was even aware of. But now I'm diving into it, understanding that, I can piece that together with, okay, here, when we're talking about military and we're talking about what's happening here and what are the analogies that we can bring in from one industry and one sector to the other, you start seeing how it's about building an instinct. You start building an instinct for, this might be relevant here. I don't know why, but this might be relevant because it connects to X, Y, and Z over here. As another example, my good friend Greg Jones, who is the president of Belmont University, he is now looking at sustainable, how do we create sustainable farming in Africa? He and this philanthropist, they're exploring that topic. And I thought, oh my goodness, the entire sustainable farming. Now you look on the coast of Africa, fishing is very important. And I was just talking with oceanpreneurs about how you know, we have to create a restorative economy for the oceans, because where we are with oceans is where we were with forestation back in the 1800s at this point in time. So what are the lessons that we can learn? And are there things that we can apply? And are things, you know, interconnected? And if we're talking about entrepreneurialism there and sustainability and lifting people out of poverty, then how do we create a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem in these regions? Well, gosh, that's, we have to start with the kids, you know, and that's junior achievement. So let's go talk to junior achievement. And by the way, they just got nominated for the Nobel Prize. And Ashish Advani, who is the CEO of Junior Achievement Worldwide, is a good friend. So it's like, oh, so there's a connection here. And so in terms of, it stems back to 20 plus years of bringing people who are not usually in the room together.
It's a good argument for the power of diverse teams and bringing that diversity of thought, diversity of background. So I think we're looking like we're running out of time. So we've had a fantastic conversation there of some of the areas we've covered. I mean, it was great to hear your mission in life to enable greatness in others. I think as a North Star, that's a wonderful thing to have. I loved how you talked about every 3 years learning something new, that coming into action, I guess, through examples of, you know, not wanting to be a LinkedIn influencer, but being selected to get access to great new tools that then led to a million followers. And then, you know, conversation with Marshall Goldsmith, and which leads to building a coaching practice and being named as number one coach in the world. So I think you've really shown that curiosity of learn something new, but then excel at it as well and really drive that. We learned from you about curiosity and coaching being all about asking questions. You've sown the seeds of another book for us of The Curious Career. We talked about self-doubt and how an element of doubt can be great because it spars curiosity, but actually too much can be paralyzing. Talked about the superpowers around how we often discount our superpowers because we look at things that come easily, and actually we need to look at others to help us to unlock that blind spot and learn what our superpowers actually are. And then also thinking around things like interpersonal superpowers of emotional glow, that maybe things that we don't often think of as a superpower actually can be hugely, hugely powerful for us. And then how things like curiosity and empathy are great examples of those superpowers. And then learning around the coincidence we have of community context and confidence being important to both of us and being in the 7 C's model, and things like how through community we build our resilience. And then a little bit also at the end there around how high-performing teams have the highest number of informal interactions and how much we can actually get from those informal interactions. So a huge amount that we covered there. If we had to pull out one element from there as a takeaway for our listeners, what would be your one element that you'd want people to take away from that conversation, Sanyin?
So, you know, and this is in my coaching and also in my new newsletter, leadershipplaybook.substack.com on superpowers. It's this idea that we all aspire to be our best selves. So the way to optimize you is to help to understand our own individual superpowers. And the way to do that is not doing it alone, but with others and through others. And conversely, we have a responsibility to help others see and believe in their superpowers. And through those connectivity, that's how we build super teams. And at the end of the day, the job of a leader, this idea of belief is instilling belief. And when I think about what does it mean to be an inspiring leader, it's not about the charisma. It's not about you. It's about them and those whom you lead. Being inspiring is the ability to help them see something in themselves that they don't yet see. And that, part of that is their superpowers, right? Helping them see their superpowers and belief.
So if you're listening to this, maybe reflect, who can you help by helping them to understand and see and believe in their superpowers, and maybe take an action to let them know that actually they have that superpower. Thank you so much, Sanyin. If people want to learn more about your work, and you referenced your new Leadership Playback Unleash Your Superpower newsletter, how can people find out more about that?
People can always reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's just Sanyin Xiang, type in there. And I have a launch play. So I think in today's world, there's no set playbook anymore. We have to build our own playbook because every situation and context is different. And so what I aim to do is give people the tools to do that. So there's the launch playbook on LinkedIn, but I'm so excited about the superpowers playbook. And that is, go to leadershipplaybook.substack.com.
leadershipplaybook.substack.com. So go check it out and learn the words of wisdom from Sanyin. So thank you so much, Sanyin, for joining us. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Sanyin. If your superpower is connecting with people,
thank you.
It's astonishing. I am looking forward to connecting with you when you're in London next. We're going to hang out.
I would love that, Garrick. Thank you.
So you've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. We're curious to hear from you. If you think there was something useful or valuable from this conversation, then we do encourage you to write a review for the podcast on your preferred channel, saying why this was so and what you've learned from it. We always appreciate hearing our listeners' thoughts and having a curious conversation. So join today at hashtag Curious Advantage. The Curious Advantage book is available on Amazon worldwide. Order your copy now to further explore the 7 C's model for being more curious. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast.
The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon.
Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.